Welcome back, Survivor fans. This is episode 11 of season 23 of Survivor South Pacific. I am your co-host, Ralph, with my other host, Chris, and we are here to bring you the highlights and analysis of all of the critical plays of this week.
So you're co-host, and I'm just other host.
I should say co-host as well. Let's not argue over semantics. Although that does seem to be our forte.
I think that the entire show is built around semantics. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Did you catch any of the Thanksgiving recap episode?
Yeah. I mean, I hate those episodes, but I get it because it's the week of Thanksgiving. They don't want to air an episode and then have people not watch it and then fall off the wagon and not come back to the show after the break. But
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's still happening. People are still not tuning in.
Oh, because it's a recap.
It's a stinker episode of a season. That's why.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I watched it. I don't get those. The thing I don't get about that episode and those episodes in general is like, is this just evidence you're holding back on us during the other episode, during the actual episodes, or, I mean, are you just completely acknowledging that you are just going to put together a filler episode so you get 15 instead of 14 out of the season, or I don't know.
They can get 15 by not having double eliminations. Like, that's not hard to do. They can manipulate the number of episodes they're getting.
The double elims actually, you know, help them move the show along when it goes into a lull, as it did the last 2 weeks while we sat around and waited for the Savaians to end up being plucked off one by one.
Right. The only thing that was a revelation to me, and I didn't really watch it, but just reading the entertainment columns that I read on a regular basis, like, apparently there was a broadcast procreation session between Keith and Whitney.
I don't know about procreation, but yeah, it was in that realm. It was they were mildly frisky, and Cochran was the third bedmate underneath their little lean-to or whatever you call that thing, and basically just gave up and was like, okay, screw this, I'm not staying in this bed. So
I find it funny that they can do that around him, and then she has the gall to go back to him and say, you disgust me, when he,
right,
you know, stabs him in the back.
Right.
You know, the controversy of that is that she's married, right?
Oh, she is?
Yeah, that was the big to-do. Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
They're separated, but, like, I don't know, like, if...
What's that?
It's not like they were still together. Like, Keith and Whitney are officially a thing now, even after the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but she was married. There was something going on. I'll have to get the whole scoop. I apologize to our devoted listeners that I don't have the full information. But
yeah, come on. Work the phones. Get the...
I don't know.
Start getting your texts in to Probst or whoever the heck else and make this happen, man.
Let's get to this week's show.
Yep.
You know, it opens with Cochran wondering if he's next and how that bums him out, and wondering whether his move was the right one or not. And Sophie, in particular, seems to object to the way that Cochran's been carrying himself of late. And I think she's got from her point of view, he definitely should appear to be a threat, being that he would have some appeal both ways, even having betrayed that side. There's a certain kind of voter that may be on the Upulu tribe who would respect a big move and maybe just regret that they didn't have the guts to make that move themselves, like a Dawn or someone like that, or maybe even a Whitney.
Except Dawn's not Upulu, but yeah, sure. Nor is Whitney.
Savaian, sorry, okay. You know what I mean, sorry.
Sure. I can see where Sophie's coming from. I mean, she said it, I think, almost perfectly when she said, I feel like I owe Edna as much as I owe Cochran. And I think the part she left out is, which is to say, I don't owe either of them very much at all, I think is what she wanted to say. She probably held that back, and wisely so. I thought that whole little pitch he gave to them was weird. At first, I thought Edna was there. I thought he had everybody. Although it appears Edna was not there and that his pitch was to make Edna the next person off. Which I thought was, I don't know, I thought it was very strange to, like, get everybody together so he could hold court for a minute or two and make his, you know, make his peace or whatever. I think the much smarter thing to do, and I'm surprised that he doesn't see this, is you work a person at a time. Like, you try to work a whole room, and you what you really do is you work nobody. Because they all just sit there and go, and then they look at each other, and everybody else is going, and so they all are like, all right, forget that. But if you sit there and work one person by themselves, then they've got nobody else to look around to confirm their own skepticism. And instead, the only person that's going to confirm anything for them is Cochran, who's going to sell them on his idea.
The only thing of rallying that group together to have this conference is just acknowledging the fact that the five of them really should stay together. It's like, look, this one guy's trying to get us to change things, but really we have the five of us, so what else do we need? You know, I don't think it worked anyway in his favor, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's frustrating about this episode is that he was doing a great job of working one-on-one in the pre-tribal scramble. He was doing a great job of that, and he didn't see that angle
early enough.
Oh, at that juncture in the game, I think, in front of the group, you want to seem almost as unlikable as possible just to try to get yourself held onto for purposes of being with the bottom three.
Yeah.
The final three.
Final three, yeah. Be somebody that's desirable to sit next to at the final tribal.
Certainly for Philip in the previous season.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I liked his moves later on. I just wish he would have gone for the individual approach earlier. I think that would have had more potential, because it gives you the opportunity to sort of see where you're at, see what you have more room to react. Whereas if you're waiting until post immunity, pre tribal, you don't have a lot of time to maneuver there. You don't have a lot of time to get feedback, let people sit on things. You know, when you're pitching people in those final hours, I got to imagine it's really tough to move someone off of their plan at that point, because moving them off of their plan, they need to be absolutely certain that everybody else who's supposedly in on this new plan is going to actually do it, and with so little time, you don't have time to get that. You can't get that confirmation. You need to have it, the wheels in motion a day or two in advance.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. That no one wants to get caught hanging. Like, you went with it, but you never knew.
You can't jump unless you
not.
Know other people are jumping with you. And in the closing hours, it's just too difficult to get everything you need to know to be able to make that jump.
Before we get to jumping too far ahead of ourselves, let's just cover all the other notes we have here. Albert and Coach both, this is Cochran's words, paying lip service to Cochran's point about them owing him something for making the move when he did and giving them the control. They seem to express some consent with what he's trying to say. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, given the outcome, at any level, was that true, or are they just trying to curry favor for a potential jury vote from him? Like, what was your take on that?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right to an extent. They particularly Coach. I mean, I think Coach is gaming people here more than he lets on, even to himself. Maybe I hate to say it. Maybe he's smarter than even he thinks.
Not thought possible. He's not actively thinking, I'm going to use these people and try to at the same time seduce them for their vote. But that's exactly what he's doing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the way he just sits there and like pets Cochran in multiple scenes is ridiculous. The you're the warrior and giving you the strength to win the challenge today and all this sort of stuff. Like, he's turning Cochrane into his little like apprentice, even though he's about to just off him, you know, and Cochrane, I have trouble deciding whether or not Cochrane is truly, you know, when he talks about his interactions with Coach in the confessionals, it seems like he's just patronizing Coach, you know, that he's just letting Coach be Coach, making Coach feel good about being Coach, sort of in the same vein, you know, I just want Coach to like me because that's going to get me further in this game, whether it be a vote from the jury or a, you know, an extra 3 days at a time sticking around. But it's hard to tell whether or not he's just patronizing him or if he actually is drinking the Kool-Aid. I think he flutters back and forth. I think there are times where he's just taken in by it all because he's Cochrane.
Survivor, yeah.
Well, that and also, yeah, I mean, there's that aspect too, just being a Survivor fanboy. Mm-hmm. But also just because, you know, he's a guy who's not, you know, not socially graceful, who's not, you know, not an athlete, etc. Not somebody who's, you know, who makes friends fast, it appears. And he's got this guy who will like who is totally taken to him and is taking him under his wing. And so I think it's difficult for Cochrane to like snap himself out of it every once in a while and remember to play the game.
Yeah, I can see that part of it. I just yeah, again, like I think there's some interesting dynamics in play here when you talk about the end game and the duality of trying to get rid of people and at the same time leaving them with a good taste in their mouths mm-hmm. of what they last experienced with you.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I think if anything, it helps to be try to be as like supportive yet noncommittal as possible, just so that people don't think, you know, you told me one thing and then you did this. And I think we saw that with Coach this episode, that you never quite knew exactly where he stood, and that's because he made no commitments either way.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Coach was impressively honest with Edna later on. You know, she basically laid it out, was like, it's pretty clear Cochran's going this vote, and that I'm going at the vote after that. And she sort of looked at Coach like, any chance you want to confirm or deny? And he basically confirmed. You know, I wonder, you know, there's a degree to which that can be. It can be commended as good gameplay because, you know, he's at least practicing what he preaches, right? The honor, the integrity, yada yada. You know, when she ends up going at the next tribal council, she can't really pick any bones with Coach.
Yeah, you know? I think ultimately, I think for the game he's playing, he did the right thing. You know, he's come this far.
I disagree that he did the right thing overall for this
episode. If you want to say that, you know, if he wants to go to the final jury and say, this is how I chose to play the game, and he can, like, lay out how things went down,
then,
you know, he'll have an argument that backs it up and says, look, here's what I did, and when I had to preserve my five, I did. When I had an option to choose someone who wasn't in my alliance, I did. I didn't ever, you know, cannibalize my own alliance, and you can say I rewarded you all for being as loyal as you were by not cannibalizing you sooner.
Yeah, the thing that I think where Coach went wrong this episode, and now we're getting way ahead of ourselves, is, you know, he said early in the episode, the smart thing for me to do is to try to go to the end with Edna and Cochrane.
Edna and Cochrane, right, yeah.
And later in the episode, like, that scenario basically presented itself. Not just a scenario where he could do it. Like, not just a scenario of, like, let's do it, but a scenario where he could do it, and it's completely feasible. The only fly in that ointment was Albert being a part of it, and Albert definitely can run some immunity challenges consecutively to protect himself from being picked off by Coach there, you know, if that four was able to hold. But otherwise, I mean, the opportunity presented itself to take control of the game. I mean, yes, you'd be sitting, the difficulty would be, you'd be sitting there with Cochrane and Albert, who both could have the potential to be formidable opponents at a final tribal council.
Yeah.
In reality, what Coach should have been saying was, I want to go to the end with Brandon and Edna, because those two could not do anything at Final Tribal Council.
Or any combination of Rick, Edna, and Brandon.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of people you can take that are still alive that you can take to the Final Tribal Council and are decidedly beatable.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Let's get back to our track here. I'm skipping ahead to the elimination challenge with plates. If there's anything else you want to mention before that.
No, that's what, yeah.
So it's Dawn and Whitney and Ozzy arriving at Redemption Arena for their challenge, which was again a callback to one of the greater, you know, endurance challenges.
Yeah,
balance,
I think that was
focus.
From Samoa, right?
I mean, the holes in my Survivor past, I can never quite say for sure where these challenges originate from. But this is a good one. I like it. It requires full dedication, and it's not like so outrageous that you know it serves only the athletic or the well balanced. Like, this really is just a focus one. You know, your arm can maintain that position for a long time, so that should not have been the issue.
Yeah, it's in a decent position, like up against the side of your body. You're not holding it out. You're
pushing down, not up. You know, that's a big deal.
That helps, certainly. Yeah, you can start to get on your toes to help lean a little weight on it, etc. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with how long they all lasted.
Was there a clock? Did I miss it?
No, I don't mean time-wise. I just mean with the stack of plates, you know, how high they got before any of them seemed to really have issue. I wasn't surprised that Dawn was the first out, although mostly because it seemed like she was having the most issues building up. Like they cut to Dawn being wobbly a couple of times. I felt like they didn't show that with Whitney or Ozzy at all.
All I saw with Ozzy was like just the super hyper focus that he's had since he entered Redemption Island, and it's a pleasure to take in.
Yeah, and then the scenes afterwards where they cut to Ozzy, you know, being the Robinson Crusoe.
did you see him like let out some sort of primal roar at the top of the tree?
Yeah, from the top of the tree. That was good.
Like, you know, they're like, "Hey, Ozzy, go climb that tree and shout when the copter goes by."
Right. No, but I enjoyed it, and Ozzy's completely right. Like,
couldn't they get him to like beat his chest? Like, couldn't that not have been part of it?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, he's got the long hair. He definitely got a good Tarzan look going.
Yeah, well, all that.
But he's in a really... Despite the fact that you always want to be, you know, a vote and a challenge away from being eliminated as opposed to just a challenge, he's in a really good place.
Yeah,
you know?
he is.
He's out there. And part of it is attitude. I mean, The guy walks around that island like it's his island. When he was voted off, he took off to Redemption Island like he was going home, and it was just going to be fantastic. Like, he's got a real good attitude about it all. And I mean, if you ask me, Ozzy is unbeatable if he makes the finals, and he's got a really good chance to do it because I mean he'll have to. To Terry Dietz's way there, but
if anyone could,
but he's the best candidate on this show, maybe save for Albert, to do that.
At what point did they come into the game last time? When it was five or four
or something like that.
When they came back, they were the fifth person.
I think so, because I think Andrea came back, and it was Andrea, the two girls, and the two guys. I think they had
Philip, Andrea, the brunette. Natalie. And Ashley. Natalie,
yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah, I think they had booted Grant, and then Grant was in the four-way Redemption Island challenge, right? It was because it was Andrea, Grant, Matt, and Mike, I think, in
the
four-way.
Ah, Tool of the Week. Craftsman Tool of the Week, Mike.
Yes, Craftsman Tool of the Week, Mike. Very good. Yeah. So I think four people left in the game... is when they will bring back. The only thing they might do is maybe bring them back one earlier, so that they don't have eight people still alive going into the finale. You know, that was what they had, eight people alive going into the finale last time.
Right, but it seems to be like they're doing. I guess without the double elimination, it's only going to be heads up between.
Oh, that's true. So it would be six people alive going into the finale instead
of
eight.
That's fine.
Which I guess isn't that bad.
No, it's not so bad.
But
at least it's not like almost half of the starting group.
Right. Right. What I really need, though, to go away. Is Probst's interview post Redemption Island Challenge interviews? That what did this adventure mean for you? Like, when did Dr. Phil start hosting this show?
Yeah,
it's killing me. It's killing me. And you hit the nail on the head several episodes ago when you said, like, it was so poignant. It was so just like so fantastic. When people would get blindsided, voted off, snuff the torch, see you later. And that was it.
Right, and you get your little moment of sour grapes as the credits roll. Like, that's your little chance.
Right, yeah, your confessional in the dark. Like, I can't believe they voted me off. Yeah.
These people are idiots. I can't wait to not vote for any of them.
Yeah. Let them, if they want to talk about what this adventure meant to them, let them do it in their little 2-minute confessional. While they air the votes on the screen, as the credits roll, you know, Probst interview. What did this mean to you? What like? Don't get me wrong. Don seems like a very nice person. Probably the most likable person out there.
Chris, how many like nice people do you know really tune into this show? Okay, the people that I know that enjoy the show, they like to see the blood. Like they want to see. They want to see the backstabbing. It's like. It's like why people tune in to Jerry Springer. They want to see the fight. They don't want to see this kiss and hug feel good story hour. You know,
here's
if you
my
want that in your reality show, if you want that in your reality show, go watch The Biggest Loser. It's good times all around.
Mm-hmm.
It's good times all around.
Exactly. Here's my promise to you: if I make it onto that show, and they do the whole Redemption Island, what did this adventure mean to you, Chris? What's that?
What did your voyage, your journey mean to you?
You know what this represented to me? This was a chance for me, a chance to play the ultimate poker game. That's what it was. This is a human poker game, and I love poker so much that this would be a fantastic way to take that to, like, the next level. This was the ultimate poker game, and that's all it meant to me. I might get emotional, but purely because my ultimate poker game was coming to an end, and that's it. It wouldn't be about, like, you know, life's challenges and you can survive out here or whatever. Completely secondary.
We should make a Redemption Island poker night where once you get knocked, you go to a heads-up table, and whoever is next out plays heads-up with you. And one of you survives.
And then
the next person eliminated.
And as the host, do I have to interview them after they lose?
Right. Yes.
What did this poker night mean to you?
Cut card into the fire over there.
Yeah, that's right. Dawn having finally begun to recover from her tears, nearly lost it again as she had to put her buff in the fire. They've got to find something new.
It's going to be a dramatic moment when Ozzy makes Cochran throw his buff in the fire.
That's true.
That's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
I'm telling you, if I were on the show, from my cold dead hands, they would get that buff.
You'd have to do it like with the fake idols, where you have to like make a fake buff.
And just kind of throw a rag. Start tie dyeing some cloth.
Throw a rag in the fire.
I actually did buy a buff from CBS.com several years ago from the All Stars season.
Pack a bunch of different colors.
Yeah, so I'll bring it with
ready.
Me. Yeah, oh, that's a good idea. Just get a bunch of rags, all dyed different colors, have them with me so that I can just toss that one into the flame. This is great. The false buff. I could also use it to, like, defect tribes, like, pre-merge. Like, oh, they've got red buffs, they're starting to win, I'll switch buffs. It's a great idea. I like it.
Add a challenge, switch buffs, and go back with the other tribe.
Yeah. See if they notice. They might notice the 6'6 guy walking around on their beach that wasn't there last week.
You, who are you? Yeah. Or like when they draw like, you know, old survivors at the beginning of the game and like, you know, it's like Eric or Parvati, which side would you want to be on? And like you draw Parv, but you really want to like just go beat up on Eric, and you go do that.
Oh, you mean when they draw for the buffs from the
The bucket, you end up or whatever? On Parv's team, but you know that's just gonna gut you, so you try to go on Eric's team.
Right.
Because he's a fool. He's a damn fool.
What? Why do you say Parv and Eric?
I always feel like Parv was like...
And who's Eric? Which Eric is this?
Eric
is this
the Eric? Red. The dumbest Eric in the whole game.
Oh, the guy who gave up his immunity
to...
The
ice cream scooper. Isn't that what he was?
The ice cream sundae artist or whatever it was. Yeah. Oh.
All right. The train has left the tracks, but that was a good diversion.
Oh, yeah. It was good.
Okay. So... You know.
Immunity at the immunity challenge, when Albert asked if he could bring a third person with him, was it just me or did it seem like he already had somebody in mind? The way he asked it, it just seemed like, you know, it was between Coach and one other person, and so it would be just so much better if he could just bring them both or something. And then when Probst let him give his reward away, then it was like, oh, now I got to think about it again. Like, it just seems so odd.
I didn't get that weird feeling that you had. I don't know what exactly you're referring to. But I did catch the line about Cochran saying that he massaged his mom, so he appreciated, like, it going the other way. Thought it was all very... That gave me a weird vibe. I didn't catch the vibe from Albert.
I didn't catch that line, and if I did, I think my food was going to go the other way.
Yeah, See, we're all better for not talking about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, but Cochran was spot on afterwards about why Albert gave it to him. It was one of two reasons. A, I want to work with you, or B, I want you to like me as we send you off at the next tribal council.
Either one is a legitimate reason. Mm-hmm.
And knowing Albert, the way we know him from confessionals, and it seems the way Cochran knows him on the island, he was completely right. I mean, Albert, every move, it appears... It appears that every move Albert makes is tactical.
Yeah, no, he's in full game mode. He's the opposite. Like every bit of game that like Edna and Rick and like those guys should be using, it's in Albert right now. He's full game on, which is amazing how that hasn't brought the bullseye to his back sooner. I mean, I guess it's just a testament to how out of it some of these players are that they don't see like Albert is crazy dangerous.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, he's been neutralized. Coach has neutralized him. Like, there are so many things that would have happened differently if Coach didn't have this, like, this loyalty blanket draped over everybody. You know, this loyalty blanket just dampens everything. And if that wasn't there, like, things would have gone vastly differently, mostly due to Albert, I think. I mean, he's put the wheels in motion on at least two or three plans now that have ultimately not gone off.
He's like the Andrea of last season, you know?
Like, he wanted to make things happen.
Andrea had some moves in her bag, and she never got to use them because the people that she needed to go with that plan were just under the thumb of the Robfather.
Yeah. Albert talks a little bit about... like, he says, and again, this could, as you've pointed out, this could be lip service to Cochran, but he says, you know, it would make him so happy to see Cochran go further in the game than Rick, because Rick's not even playing the game, and I think that's actually genuine, because, I mean, he sort of echoes that sentiment in a confessional as well, talking about how Rick's about as sharp as a bowling ball, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but all those arguments lend credence to the idea that he should be going to the end with you, not being eliminated. Who cares if he's calling you names behind your back? Like, that should only motivate you to use him to your end.
And that's the thing, though, for me, that's a dilemma. And I think sitting
in because you have this whole thing about honor, about, like, I could have brought this person, but I didn't. And I don't want you to see me as chickening out from the challenge of whatever.
And I think you would be the same way if you were in that situation. Just, I mean, just based on the fact that, like, you... I mean, not this warrior spirit crap that Coach always likes to babble on about, but just in general, like, you want to... If you win, you want to win having beaten people who were good, not having beaten people who were awful.
Yeah. If it's a poker game, I don't want to sit next to someone who... I don't want to lose someone who got to the end by sucking out, you know, or...
And that's just, where it comes to, what being, it comes down to for me.
Is being bad and finding your way there.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to for me, because the thing is ultimately if I lose, I want to be okay with the person I lost to. And I guess some of that comes down, that also comes down to not trusting the people who will have the decision in their hands, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, if I trusted the people who had the decision in their hands, then yes, I'd take Rick to the end because I'd have no doubt that they're gonna vote for me over Rick because I was, you know, a bag of, you know, I had strategy dripping from my ears and Rick couldn't find a lick of it. But I wouldn't trust the people who were in charge of that decision, and I wouldn't be able to live with losing to Rick. I'd be able to live with losing to Cochran or to Albert. You know?
It's painful watching Rick play. I mean, like, they had a confessional with him, and that was so weird. Just so weird.
There are moments where he's on camera engaged in a conversation, and I almost wonder, like, does he not speak English? Like, the way he's looking at the person who's talking to him, it looks like he speaks a different language. And they're just, you know, they're babbling at him in Greek, you know?
And he's just kind of, like, nodding and just lost. I don't know. You were privy to the conversation on Facebook, but just engaging a friend of mine from high school, John, and talking about the season, and another friend of mine from high school, Julie, chimed in, and general consensus was that just the casting has just been off,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just the people they're bringing in are not fit to play this game, and whether they think by bringing in, you know, this rancher stereotype to try to play the games would make things more interesting for a certain demographic of this country is just wrong. I mean, more than anything anyone anywhere wants to see is the human drama that comes from $1 million being decided by a vote of your peers that you had a hand in putting on the jury. So, you know, I don't know how they haven't seen, you know, these failing returns, but it's an issue. Like, the casting is not there.
Well, yeah, they're just they're diluting their show in an attempt to give it a broader appeal, and it seems like the producers are, you know, maybe they're just getting heat from CBS, and CBS is directing this a lot, but it seems like an attempt to create broader appeal, but ultimately, you know, it's like, you know, it's like choosing a curriculum for a class. You know, you can go a mile wide and an inch deep, or you can go a mile deep and an inch wide. And, you know, they're attempting to go a mile wide, but an inch deep. And which ultimately means, yeah, you get a mile wide, you hit all of those people, but all of them don't really feel that deeply about your show. They're not that into your show. It's like, yeah, if it's on, they happen to notice, oh yeah, okay, I'll watch it.
Right.
And what they're not acknowledging is the fact that television is headed in the opposite direction, that with a jillion channels, et cetera, it's niches is where you need to go. You know, shows on AMC and Showtime, et cetera, where they're not even, you know, they don't even have that large of a potential audience, let alone an actual audience for each of their shows. You know, there's only, I don't know what the number is, there's only 14 million Cinemax subscribers or Showtime subscribers or whatever channel Dexter is on. And
Showtime.
Is it Showtime? Okay.
Yeah.
And, but they're okay with that, and so they're just gonna, like, they're gonna take the people who their show already appeals to, and they're gonna amp up the stuff that appeals to them. And that's the thing you need to do with the show, and that's what we've been talking about, is take the people who your show already appeals to on a fundamental level, and just amp that up to keep them hooked. Don't go crazy trying to broaden your appeal, because when you do that, you then dilute the appeal you had to the fanboys, you know?
I went on iTunes and I looked back at the one review we have. By the way, thank you to the one reviewer we have on iTunes.
Yeah, Maria TJCL or whatever it was.
And she said that this was a show for Survivor scum lovers. Do you think that's our problem, Chris? Is that we're mad at the season because there's not enough scum? Like, I think that's the issue.
That's all perspective. I mean, because what we look for, you and I look for, is gameplay, and the way we see it is gameplay is okay. You know, turning your backs on people, you know, breaking alliances, forming new ones as you need to in order to survive longer is okay because that's what you signed up for. You signed up for a game. This is the poker player in us that says you didn't have to put your chips on the table. If you didn't want to play this game, you shouldn't have sat down. And, you know, that reviewer, I think, tends to see it differently. And, you know,
I think she represents this group of people who enjoy the show for seeing different kinds of people interact. And they do want to see a measure of honor in the game. And we don't see it that way. I think there are some fundamental differences in how people experience the show, which... for us is unfortunate.
Instead of calling it the scum lover, I would call it the game player. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think it, like, I think it's, you know, as much as we were criticized in that review for trashing people who are not big time game players, I think she deserves criticism for trashing us for appreciating game players. You know, I think that cuts both ways.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not going to disagree with you. I just want to throw that out there, that perhaps there's an element to this where, you know, we just see one aspect of it, and there are different people in the country who don't... They're not looking for the drama. They want to see honor. They want to see a good guy, in their eyes, what they call think of a good guy as winning the game. I can't support the gameplay of a Rick or an Edna, just sort of, you know, just like Albert said, out clean, out gather, out laundry.
Yeah, that was the line. That was the line from last or two weeks ago. Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, that's a TLC show.
Speaking of great lines, and this is my segue back to Tribal.
Yes.
Cochran hit a home run.
What? Which line was that?
Talking strategy with Brandon is like talking to you about shirts that aren't...
Oh yes, that was fantastic. That was beautiful.
The best line we've had all season.
That's the best line in several seasons, I think.
Yeah.
I put that up there. I put that up there with Boston Rob's response to Jeff. It takes more than one person to vote somebody out in this game. You know that, Jeff.
So good. And just the look on Probe's face is like, wow, that's...
It was great. It's like talking to you about shirts that aren't blue.
I can't even respond.
That was it's at the next level. It's he went meta. He went above the game, and at the same time, is still engaged in what's happening. Everybody's kicking dirt on Brandon.
He got Jim to smile. Like Jim hates him.
Oh really? I didn't know. I didn't see the cutaway to Jim.
He got Jim to smile.
No one else
laughed at it. I it's such a shame that no one else caught that. Like, there had to have been, like, crew members rolling.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it was this season or last season. Probst mixed in a green shirt somewhere. I remember seeing, like, tweets about this. Like, Twitter blew up. Well, it didn't really blow up, but, you know, the Survivor fan base of Twitter blew
up.
Oh, Chris. You know, green shirt. Jeff, what happened? Was there a fire? Was that all you could find? I have some others mixed in there, yeah. But he appreciates... I mean, he obviously appreciates it.
No, yeah, I'm sure he ate it up. And I appreciate Jim, because Jim has that great Eliza Orleans jury body language where, like, everything earns an eye roll or, like, a face palm or something where he has to contribute in a non-verbal way. And
yes, very stage acting.
It's great. You know? It's really solid.
Everything is very bodily acted out.
You want to see, because you know that would be us. You know we'd be over there just dying, like hearing some of the stuff that's coming out from these people that clearly didn't deserve to be there over us, and we would just be steaming like the whole time.
Yeah. Well, and then just on top of it, I loved how overt everybody was about Brandon. He basically just got kicked in the face by the other six people sitting there saying,
Yeah.
You're here because we just haven't bothered voting you off yet.
I'm pretty sure he punched his ticket to the final three tonight. Like, I don't know how else.
It's amazing how tortured he is. I don't even know what he was going on about. Like, they kept cutting to him, and you could see, like, you could see the knots inside of him tightening. Like, you could feel you could feel the rope just pulling and pulling and pulling inside of him. And just, you know, everything winding up and just waiting for the cork to blow off of this bottle of champagne, and then it all just overflows. And he's so tortured, and the hands and the face palming, and it's amazing. And it's, the funny thing is they all just kicked dirt on him about how bad he is at strategy, and to be honest, I think they were being nice. Like, he can't handle it. He literally cannot handle it, as evidenced by his torture sitting there at Tribal Council.
How old is he, like 19, 20?
Yeah.
He's so out of his element, it's not even right.
It's like, amazing.
He's completely out of his class.
Yeah,
this is the closest you're going to get to putting just a straight-up middle schooler on Survivor, you know? He doesn't get it, you know? And if not for Coach, he would be nowhere. He would be
gone long ago, and yeah. I just don't understand the torture. Like, I mean, I get that, like, one of them, I forget who, said something about him clearly needing this religious presence to help suppress something within him or whatever. And that's, I think that's spot on. But I don't get it. Like, what possibly, like, what's going on the island? Like, it's not like there's drug dealers on every corner and he's fighting temptation.
Yeah, there should be no temptation for him to be fighting anymore.
Like, the only temptation he's got to battle here is, like, playing the Russell game. That's the only thing he's got
to
fight.
He has no opportunity to play that game. Like,
exactly.
He wouldn't be able to influence people. He couldn't do it.
And that's what I don't get is, like, what's the battle? What's the battle?
Yeah, I don't know. I you know what, Chris, to be honest, I got sucked in and I legitimately believed that Rick was going home, going to Tribal Council. And
I did too. I thought it was going to happen.
I thought CBS did a great job of selling us on what seemed to be a plausible alliance between Albert and Cochran and Edna and Coach. And
yeah.
I really thought that this was the beginning of some endgame machinations, but it didn't end up that way. And I was so mad when it came out Cochran. I was just...
Yeah.
I really thought, you know, if he can pull this out, he is totally in the driver's seat for the rest of the way. You know, I really thought he had a chance to kind of get there and finish it. Now... I don't. He has a 1% chance in my mind of coming back. Like,
oh yeah. Well, I mean, you saw in the preview for next week. He's talking. I mean, he's. It's actually quite interesting to look at because it's a nice juxtaposition of him and Ozzy. They are polar opposites in so many ways.
Yeah.
Cochran is all about the strategy. Ozzy is Brandon strategy wise, less the mental anguish that comes from it. Ozzy is a physical specimen, and Cochran is the physical leftovers. And Ozzy is going into Redemption Island with the most positive attitude you could possibly have, and Cochran is going in thinking, I have no chance, to the point where he's literally asking Ozzy if he has a chance. I couldn't tell if, you know, he probably said, do I have a chance? I think he was asking Ozzy just to let him have a chance. Like, will you give me your A-minus game at least so I have a little bit of a chance? Because otherwise, if you bring A game, I don't have a chance. And it's, I mean, and Ozzy embodies this spirit of, I can do it, this is where I need to be, when they cut to him in the confessional, right after he tells... Cochran, he has a little bit of a chance. He says, "No, he doesn't have a chance."
Yeah, no,
that's true.
That's
he doesn't have a chance.
That's my favorite editing. You know, when they string those two together.
Oh yeah.
You got anything left? I don't know.
No, I think that was about it. You know, the big thing for me this episode, we talked about it a little bit, not heavily, but we don't need to belabor it. Was just that I feel like Coach missed his shot here. You know, and especially, like you said, the way they edited it, they said, you know, they set it up with Coach talking about Shakespeare and the moment for fortune, and or walking around in the shadow of that moment if you let it pass you by. And when he was saying that, I once again, thought to myself, despite all Coach's delusions of grandeur for himself, he's actually right here.
Yeah.
He's actually right. He's not overstating it.
I was convinced this was a complete construction of his imagination, but I did my diligence. I found it. It's a line from Julius Caesar, Act 4, Scene 3.
Oh, yeah?
Brutus says, "There's a time in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat. And we must take the current
shallows.
When it
I thought
serves.
It was shadows.
And we must take the current when it serves, or lose our ventures." It's a great line. I think it is completely applicable to the situation. And I was happy that Coach, for once, was coming from a place of genuine knowledge and not this pseudo philosophy that he has.
Surviving the Amazon war tribes and all that sort of stuff.
Better to go with the bard in the end. That's the smarter way to go. Yeah, all right, Chris, where do they find us in our online presence?
You can get us on Twitter. The handle is @tribalpodcast, and you can email us. The email address is podcast@tc.vanb.net. And sadly, this is the last day of November, so this brings the Anyvember promotion to a close. unfortunately, nobody took us up on it. With any questions. So
in response, December is like shutdown December. You can send your questions, but don't expect a response.
Yeah, I guess we need to take like the Tony Kornheiser approach to viewer mail and just diss them at every opportunity you get. You know, tell them they're idiots, you ruin the show, and it's a good thing we're here to keep this show good.
All right, well, on that note, we will see you next time for the further adventures of Coach and Friends. On behalf of Chris, this is Ralph. I'll see you later.